Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? I'd like to welcome you all to It's Real Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tay Real. My co-host, Nizzy Nay, is in the building.
What's up, everybody?
Oh, man, so... where do we start? Racism in America. Let's just cut right to it. There's been a lot of things going on, a lot of tension and stuff. Through news media, we've been hearing a lot of stories. Trayvon Martin or the Zimmerman trial has been, like, the most talked about story that's been going on. But it's been other stories and things going on, too. And it's been a lot of, tension in the air and... It's just been kind of crazy. So we just felt like it was kind of important. You know, I think it's everybody's responsibility to see what's going on and speak on it and be knowledgeable and, you know, just try to be, like, sensible about things. And things, you know, when things are happening, things are going on that's affecting the not just, like, one area, one community, one city, but the whole country. It's kind of important to, like, you know, speak on things. So, you know, we have this outlet to be able to speak and let our voices be heard. And I think it's important to speak on this because it's something that's having a powerful impact. So as we all know, I mean, we did the George Zimmerman verdict show on that. We did that already, so we really spoke on that. But this trial, this Zimmerman verdict trial, like, actually does play a role in what's happening with all of this racial tension and profiling and all this stuff that's going on right now, because it was such, like, it was so big on the media. Like, the media followed it for weeks and weeks, the whole trial. And it's like you almost can't talk about racism, but, like, what's happening right now in the country without speaking on the Zimmerman verdict. Nizzy Nay, what's your feelings about all of this racism going on, racial profiling, racial tension in the air right now?
I mean, I think it's crazy. Well, I think the whole thing started with the whole Paula Deen case. I think that's what really, really started was the whole Paula Deen thing. That's what started it, because before then, you really didn't hear much about it until, like, the whole Paula Deen issue came up, and then all of a sudden, and then this whole Trayvon Martin case come up, and it's just back-to-back all about, you know, race. I think it's crazy. When, in fact, that case shouldn't even have been about race, really. It should have been about Trayvon Martin, personally, what happened to him. But all of a sudden, it turned into this big racial thing. Like, I thought that, you know, I knew that racism was still around, but some of these people talking, it's just crazy. Like, it's just, like, it's major. Like, just like we were talking, like, about that show with Paula Deen, like, we thought that, you know, it had pretty much died down. Like, oh, wow, you know, there's this, you know, things are actually changing and all that. And then you deal with the Trayvon Martin, and then you realize that things haven't really changed too much. It's like it's still a big, well, it will always be a big issue, but I at least thought that it would at least calm down a little bit more, you know, since we are in 2013. And it just surprises me.
Go ahead.
I'm done.
You know what, though? You know what's crazy? Like, I think it did. Like, I think it's just, like you said, like racism, of course, exists, and you know, there's always going to be some form of racism, and it's always going to be a lot of negativity and evil in the world. But it's just like the magnitude of it, like, you know, like I think the whole media coverage just makes it just so much more noticeable. Like, people deal with racism every day. I mean, look at all the racial acts that happen in America alone that probably never even make the media, never make the mainstream media. You know, so this stuff is happening. This stuff is going to happen. I mean, people are going to rob, steal, kill. People are going to be pedophiles. People are going to be gay. People are going to do whatever they choose to do. This stuff is going to happen, but you know, it's the magnitude. It's the like the how much it's being observed. Like the media coverage. Like, it's amazing what the impact that media coverage has on people. I mean, it's mind boggling. Like, you know, this stuff has been happening. Like the Trayvon Martin, the whole little thing that happened with Trayvon Martin. Stuff like that does happen, but you know, because this one is the one that ended up becoming such a big case, it was covered, you know, all around the country. And because of, you know, the media coverage of it, people really noticed it. And then people that go day to day without thinking about race, because let's face it, a lot of us has studied, you know, racism in school and, you know, stuff like Martin Luther King and, you know, how leaders, black leaders, had to fight for blacks' rights to vote and be equal and all that. We learned that stuff in school. But, you know, when you grow up, I mean, the country compared to back then has really progressed. We even have a black president now, you know. I mean, he's half black, half white, but, I mean, he's black and he looks black. You know, so we've made a ton of progress. And, you know, like the average day-to-day citizen, like, doesn't really necessarily experience a lot of racism in their life. It all depends on where you live. I know there's some southern states. I hear a lot of stories about racism in southern states. You know, but if you grow up in an area that's like, that isn't, you know, like, if you grow up in an area that has a lot of, like, you're saying race, like if you're Mexican and you grow up in a Mexican area, or, you know, populated area, or you're black and you grow up in a black populated area, you're not going to experience much racism, maybe through, like, you know, police brutality or something like that. But for the most part, right, you won't experience it that much yourself. So my point in saying that is that, you know, people, a lot of people weren't thinking about this. You know, people are going on with their day-to-day lives knowing that racism exists, but it's not like something that you think a lot about because it's not happening to you. And then you see this trial, and you see a non-black man, you can say Hispanic. I guess you can kind of say white because his dad is obviously white. But a non-black murder a 17-year-old teenager and get away with it. I mean, once people see that, that triggers something. You know, that makes people really start looking, paying attention. And then you go on the internet and you find out all these other stories that's happening, and it's like, wow, you know, so many other things that are happening that people wouldn't even be paying attention to because it's all about that mainstream media coverage of things, you know. And then after the trial, after the verdict, the media continued to speak on it, which is kind of like rubbing salt in the wound if you think about it. I understand the media got a job to do, but their influence on people's frame of minds is huge. It's huge. And
yeah,
when
it
they
is.
Kept talking about it, and then not only did they keep talking about it, but they kept talking about racism. Racism kept coming up. You know, it kept coming up. So, I mean, that, to me, I personally feel like that definitely added fuel to the fire. And that made people, I mean, even myself, I was, that even had me watching, like, wow, this is messed up. Like, all this stuff is going on. I wouldn't even have been noticing. Me, myself, I can honestly say, I wouldn't have been noticing a lot of this stuff had it not been for mainstream media's coverage on the Trayvon Martin trial. I mean, I don't know. Like, you know what? This is what I was thinking. Like, this is what I want to ask you, and this is your opinion. Do you agree with media, mainstream media, covering, like, stories like trials, like big murder trials, like especially like dealing with racism and stuff, like for the country to see and like for the country to like actually see and follow up on it and really be locked in and dealing with like the response, how like, you know, it could like the Casey Anthony, and that was messed up. That was messed up. It really was. But it's like, it seemed like it creates so much tension, like a lot of bad stuff starts happening after, like, you know, when the verdict don't go the way that, you know, the majority of the country wants it, you know, people was getting threatened and all this stuff is starting to happen. What do you think about, like, the media's coverage on things like, especially something like the Zimmerman trial, something to deal with profiling, racial profiling? Do you think that the media covering these things is a good idea for the country in that frame of mind?
I think it's good for us to know what's going on in the world, but to have that trial actually like broadcasted, I think it was wrong. They should have kept that pretty much closed. Like, the world shouldn't have been shown that, because just like you said, it causes a lot of tension. Like, if nobody knew what was actually going on, I don't think it would be, like, people wouldn't, I think people are, like, protesting and all that. Like, a lot of that wouldn't be going on. And then you got, you know, just, like, the people on HLN talking about it, and it just adds fuel to the fire. You know, talking about, you know, race and all that, and I think it affected a lot of people that way.
And there's been a lot of reports of, like, just stuff like, you know, violent things like, you know, blacks attacking whites attacking blacks, you know.
Yeah.
Like, since the verdict was announced, like, you know, it's just been reports of, you know, things like that happening. It's been a lot of negative energy in the air. And it, you know,
yeah,
it kind of,
because they made it worse. They made it worse by calling this a racial thing. They made it worse. The media made it worse. They made it worse. So now everybody, you know, the blacks are getting mad at the whites because of this situation. Everybody's getting mad because the media made it worse. Like, just watching this a little bit on YouTube, like, it was a heated conversation. Like, you can literally see it was like that, just watching them talk about the whole case and everything. It was getting heated between them. And it just added fuel to the fire for everybody else. Because I know a lot of people, like, followed this whole case. I know a lot of people that followed. I mean, the whole world knows about this whole thing. And it's not right for them to broadcast that all on TV like that. They should have kept that closed door. I mean, we have a right to know what's going on, but they just had too much of it on TV for people to see. Like, they shouldn't have done that. And just like with the whole Casey Anthony case, too, they had too much of it broadcasted. Like, why would they do that? Like, I believe that Zimmerman was guilty too, but now he's got to watch his back. Because I wouldn't be shocked in a couple of months from now that he got shot at or beat up or something like that because of this whole situation. And anybody that was defending him might get beat up, shot up, or whatever. Because of all this stuff being on TV. It's crazy. They trying to turn the world upside down.
It is kind of crazy. Like, And I'm not going to lie, some of these trials, when you're watching it and you're following up on it, you know, we don't study law. We're not law students, so we don't fully understand, like, how the law operates. A lot of times the experience, like, prosecutors, defense attorneys who are, like, you know, speaking on different channels, who, like, use former prosecutors and former defense attorneys and stuff like that, a lot of times they speak on the law in such a way that they're, like, they don't even fully understand it. Like, you know, different states' laws and stuff can be different. Then you never really can predict how the jury is going to, like, you know, perceive things. Like, it's so many elements to take into consideration. The only thing we know about law is watching stuff like Law and Order, CSI, like criminal investigation type of shows and stuff, which we don't know how much of it is fiction. You know, we don't know. So, I mean, we only know based on watching TV until a trial comes up. So, but it is like, it is pretty interesting. I can't lie. But at the same time, I think, like, it can be hazardous, you know, because you watch it and you learn stuff and it's like, oh, wow. And you watch the strategies break down and all that stuff, and it's like, it's kind of cool in a way to see how it really happens and goes down. But then you got to look at the overall picture, the impact that it has in people's frame of mind. Like, you know, like how upset people be in, you know, the outbursts, like, that happened after. Like for instance, like the whole OJ trial. And people were zapping out about that. And that was back in the day, but, I mean, people were zapping. Like, it was an outrage for people, and people were upset. So it's like, you know, yeah, like you said, like, you know, people need to know what's going on and stuff, but it's always important stuff going on in the world, and I think that things can be covered in a way. I don't know. I don't know if I really agree myself with, like, you know, like, the covering the trial, like, because – to really be real about it, I heard about the Trayvon Martin last year when it happened. I was at a college, and, you know, a woman had came up to me and passed me a flyer, like, are you going to this march? And I'm like, a march on what? And she's like, a young man got shot and killed by a white guy. And that's all I knew. And I was like, wow, really? And that's all I knew. So I didn't know much about it. I heard little bits and pieces. So it was in the back of my mind, but for this year, 2013 to come, to actually watch the trial on TV, you actually do become, you develop an attachment to the story, and you start to feel like you're a part of it, like that's your family member. Whoever side you're on, you feel like, if you actually choose a side, like, you feel like, well, I feel like this side is the side that's, you know, justified. You know, once you start to feel that way and develop an attachment, you start to feel like it's really a friend or family member. And you really do, like, feel some type of way after the verdict. You know, if it would have went the other way, it would have been a lot of Zimmerman supporters feeling some type of way, and I think it would have been it would have been the reverse. It would have been the opposite. You know, the Zimmerman supporters would be acting in a way that the Trayvon Martin supporters are acting.
Yeah.
I think it could be really hazardous, and I don't know. Like, the whole idea of cameras being in the courtroom is like, how does it really benefit? Like, what does it solve? You know, what does it get us? Like,
it just really just it just makes the world mad. That's really what it does. I don't know why they do that. This makes everybody mad. They feel like everybody has to see that whole freaking trial. And it's unnecessary. Like, I understand they want us to know about it. Like, we have a right to know about some things, you know, what's going on. But that trial, we don't need to see all them trials. Like, they shouldn't even put the trials on TV at all. Like, that's unnecessary for that to happen. Because what are you doing? You just making people mad. Like, I knew when that whole Casey Anthony case, like, everybody was ready to kill her. because they found her not guilty. Like, everybody was ready to kill her. Because when they did the whole trial on the TV, like, it's unnecessary.
And that can have an impact on other people, too, because they're saying that she's a child killer, right? So picture another woman who was accused of being a child killer in a similar situation, right? And maybe, you know, that kind of, you know, was the past and people got over it and it wasn't a mainstream thing. After people seeing the Casey Anthony trial, right, and they're like, oh, you know what? That lady across the street, she was a Casey Anthony, too. Like, she murdered, you know, like, you know, we think that she murdered her child or whatever. She's a child killer. And you know what? I'm mad about that now. I don't know Casey, you know, like, I don't know that person. Hold up. So let me ask you this, because it's been a while since I've read it. Casey Anthony was the mother, right? Or was that the mother that died? It was the mother. Casey Anthony was the lady accused of the murder?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, all right, cool. So I'm on the right page. Okay, yeah. So it's people who were like, if they had somebody in their neighborhood that, like, was accused of that, and let's say 2 years ago, but it wasn't a mainstream trial, right? People forgot about it, moved on with their lives, or maybe not necessarily forgot about it, but moved on. It's going to be a lot of anger towards that person now because of what happened. You know, mainstream media, people's minds are refreshing, like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, we don't know her personally, so we can't go protesting where she's at or nothing, but we got a lady right around the corner. Let's, you know what? I got something for her. You know, like, that's what happens. That's what happens, like how, you know, with this Zimmerman trial, like, people start to get mad and start to think back on things. Well, you know what? How can I unleash this fury, this anger? Like, you know, oh, there's somebody in my area that had a similar situation. Oh, you know what? I got something for that person. You know, like, so, or a person that's locked up, you know, can start a riot in jail. You know, like, people just get attached to situations like that, like mainstream media coverage. So, you know, my point in saying that is just it can be definitely hazardous, and it affects a lot of people. Like, it doesn't just affect the people who are, like, who the coverage is about. It affects people around the country. You know, just like somebody accused of being a pedophile, and that trial was on television and all that stuff, and now somebody else in that area, and you know, you can look up a pedophile in your area right online. Now, all of a sudden, somebody who's accused of being a pedophile walk into the store, and, you know, let's say a pedophile was on trial when they got off, but they looked online to find out this guy two blocks around the corner is a registered sex offender accused of being a pedophile. You know, you don't know if he actually is just because, you know, he got charged as one. And then they see him in the store, especially young people, because young people really act on emotions. Bam, they jump him, beat him up, hospitalize him. You know, stuff like that just happens. And it's just like, man, it can really play a big role, you know. So I feel like, you know, the media, you know, does have a responsibility to put the facts out there and let us know what's going on, but in a way that's, like, in a considerable fashion. You know what I'm saying? Isn't it in a considerable fashion?
Yeah.
But, of course, the reporters, you got to keep in mind the reporters have a job to do. They're told what to do from the higher-ups. So
that's true.
Whoever the higher-ups are, we don't know who the higher-ups are, but whoever they are, I think – they are the ones that you really got to look at because, you know, the reporters are going to cover what they're asked to cover. You know, a reporter can't just go and say, I'm going to cover my cousin because that's my cousin. Like, no, it don't work that way. You know, but see, that's why I can never be a reporter because I'm too much of a passionate person. I'm too much of a passionate person, and I would not be I could not allow myself to not speak what I felt. Not just what I'm told. That would bother me, especially when I know what I'm saying is being heard around the city, the state, the country. Like, I don't think I could do it. I really don't. Like, that's a crazy job to have right there. Because you see yourself being a reporter. Picture yourself being a reporter And, you know, you feel the way you feel personally about this Zimmerman trial, right? But you
right.
had to cover it. That's your job. And you can't, I mean, you know, you can't really necessarily speak your mind on it, especially if you're a reporter, like not the one that's in the studio, but the one that's out there with the microphone in your hand. You really got to watch what you say, you know. And if you don't see, that's why I like HLN, because they do like kind of do their own thing. But if, like, a lot of these local stations, they're like straight, you know, they're like straight Hollywood with theirs. Like, they got a guideline they follow by. Like, they can't just say what they want. Strict rules. If you work for one of those media outlets, I mean, you're pretty much reading a script at that point. Like, could you imagine having that type of job, having to cover that? Like,
no. Like, just like the Trayvon Martin case, like, I would be too passionate about it. I probably would end up flipping out on some people.
Right on camera.
Yeah, like I would lose control, especially if I had to like interview like somebody like Frank Taffy. Like if I had to do that, like I probably would end up punching him in his face. Like literally, like I would probably lose control and punch him in his face. I would get fired. Like I wouldn't be able to do it. I don't know how reporters, like, they can, like, contain themselves. Like, how are they, you know, you got to act professional even though you feel some type of way about the situation. You have to be professional. Like, I don't know how reporters do that. Like, that's hard, especially, like, if it's, like, a racial case like this, like, and you're an African-American, you see this happening, you know, you're going to get a little attached to the case. Like, it's really going to affect you. And then you got to interview somebody like George Taffy, it's like,
Frank
oh, he's going to break loose.
Yeah. Yes, I definitely see what you're saying. Like, I think that, you know, who knows how they're taught, you know, like how many years of schooling they have, you know, to become professionals. But I'm pretty sure that they take probably multiple classes on how to be reporters and not let their personal feelings interfere with their job. It gotta be, because there's no way, because, you know, with the things that's happened in the media and around the country over the years, like, you know, for these reporters to stick to the script, you know, it's almost like they got their own little thing going on over there, you know, like they got their own little brotherhood, like, you know, this is the code, just like how in the hood you got to apply by the code. You know, I think that reporters got to apply by the code, because if you don't, you're going to lose your job. I mean, quick. Like, imagine a reporter saying, you know what, right on TV, you know what, screw this. This is how I feel. They probably won't even get the security, will probably be escorting them out before they even finish their segment. Like,
yep.
It's just, you know. So, and it's crazy, though, because the impact that it has, like all this racism. Oh, man, it's like, you know, you're feeling good because, you know, you see where the country has come. I mean, because we're seeing, because it's being covered now and because of the tension in the air, we're seeing racism happening now. But before this Trayvon Martin trial really started being covered in mainstream media, a lot of people weren't thinking about it. Only the people that has it happening to them, like recently, you know, probably, you know, were thinking about that. But for the most part, your average everyday citizen is like, okay, well, wow, this is great. We got a black president, and, you know, it's progress. And I would encourage people to see the bigger picture that, you know, regardless of what the media is covering, like, there has been progress. Because if this was, like, the 40s or the 50s, you know, you wouldn't have that manager position or that, you know, that big position at your job making, you know, six figures and, you know. So, I mean, we really, really progressed, and people have fought and sacrificed their lives for us to progress. Not only blacks, but, you know, whites have supported and, you know, a lot of white Americans aren't for racism either. Like, you know, they're very supportive of, you know, equal opportunity for everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and people need to keep that in mind. Like, everybody's not racist. Like, every white person doesn't, you know, discriminate on black people and doesn't hate black people and vice versa, you know? And I think a lot of people, well, obviously, you know, so if you're a person that gets online and, like, you know, you like to go on YouTube and Google and follow up on current events, you know exactly what we're talking about. And you really realize how much, you know, racism is still going around when you, like, for instance, watch YouTube and then you look at the comments. You know, and it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy because, like, these are things that a lot of these people behind these comments say, these things behind these made-up usernames say these hateful things, but they wouldn't say it in real life to a person. Like, you don't see a black man walking down the street and the white guy just say, hey, you N-word, you know, why don't you go back to Africa or something. Like, you don't see that stuff really happening. Like, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't happen at all, but that's just not something that you see happening on an average day in America. I mean, maybe in states that are really, really racist, but that's kind of like, you know, people have their jurisdictions. Like, all right, everybody knows that area of town is racist, white people. So black people don't go there, and, you know, vice versa. White people don't go to this area in the hood because they are just like, no white people come up. Like, if for any place that's segregated like that, then that's what it is. You know, that's their own little area. That's their own little thing they got going on. But for the most part in the country, like, you know, we've all, you know, come to, like, coexist together. But, like, the stuff that these people say in these, like, on these, like, videos and stuff, like, the stuff that people, comments that people post online is crazy. It's, you can almost gotta laugh at it, though, because it's like, wow, you're saying all this stuff behind a computer screen? Like, really? Like, what type of pride does that take? You know, like, that's, it's just crazy. How do you feel about people that, you know, are racist behind the computer screen, Nizzy Nay? Like, how do you feel about those people?
I think is ignorant. Like, being racist behind the computer screen, really? Because they're not what is it? They can't say it to your face. Like, what is that? That's just being a freaking coward.
Cowardly. That's, yeah, cowardly, exactly.
Yeah. Like, I've met, like, a few people that was like that. Like, they're big racists on social networks. Like, really? Like, why even get on this a social network when you know you're going to run into all types of people? All types of people.
I think a lot of people that do it is, like, that's their primary goal. Like, they want to get on to create a random username and go comment and say all the safe things because that's probably how they feel. And the internet gives everybody a voice, everybody a chance to say whatever they're thinking, but in a way that they won't have to, you know, suffer consequences for it, you know? So, I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. Just, and it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care. Like, even for any black person that's saying crazy, hateful things towards white, like, it don't matter. Like, racism is racism and is wrong either way and it's ignorant and it's cowardly. I don't care. Like, you know, it's no bias for me as far as I'm concerned. Like, a black person that's doing that towards white people, I feel like, you know, the same way. Like, I'm not going to be biased because I know every white person doesn't hate black people. Every white person isn't racist. There's a lot of support. Like, it was amazing. Like, if you see how many, like, white Americans are standing next to black African Americans on the protest with the Zimmerman verdict, that should show you right there. So how crazy is that to turn around and start attacking white America because you're upset about the verdict. Like, they don't have nothing to do. Like, people can't control that. Like, nobody controls that but the jury. You know, the jury, the court system, you know, the jury had to deliberate, and they did. And that was the verdict. And a lot of us don't agree with it. But, you know, to turn around and start attacking and have random acts of violence because of that makes, you know how bad that makes black culture look, black African Americans look in general? I mean, for everything that all of the great black African Americans that fought for equal rights and opportunity, for everything they fought for and sacrificed their lives to see black African Americans behave this way, it's ridiculous, it's uncalled for, and I can't condone it, like, you know. So, I mean, it goes both ways, you know, for a white person to not like a black person because of the color of their skin, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's 2013. Nobody's going nowhere. White people aren't going anywhere. Black people aren't going anywhere. We're all in this country together. Mexicans aren't going anywhere. Puerto Ricans aren't going anywhere. It don't matter what race, Asians, everybody, people that are here. This is not the country. This is not a segregated country. This is not a country that's just like, all right, well, listen, if you're not this color, you don't belong here. You got to accept it, you know? So to turn around and have random acts of hate crimes and racism is totally ridiculous. So I just would like to see everybody get it together. Like, there's no bias. I'm just a person that's just like, you know, everybody should respect, you know, the fact that America is America, and everybody has a right to be here. Because this is not the white man's land. This is not the black man's land. You know, we all know the story. You know, I'm sure there's different stories, but we all know that, you know, this is not the white man's land or the black man's land. That's one thing we do know, and we can just leave it at that, you know. But we all know it's not any of our land. You know, it's not our land. It's not black land. It's not the black America's land. It's not white America's land. But, you know, we're here. And that's just what it is. So none of us have the right to be, like, you know, tell each other that you don't belong here or this is our country. No, none of that. Like, you know, just everybody should just take a chill pill. Just be grateful that you're in a country that is considered arguably the greatest country in the world, you know, in a country where, you know, you have a chance to eat, you know, like, you're not starving, you know. I mean, like, you know, you got, you know, all the great things that this country has to offer. And, you know, we criticize the government and stuff, but then you got to give some credit, too. Like, you know, all right, we got a lot of arguments about government policy and stuff, but, I mean, the government does take care of people, too. I look at all these people on food stamps, all these people receiving welfare. If this was one of those countries that the government didn't help their people out, where would people be? You know, like, people would be starving. People would be, like, 90 pounds, like, you know, for instance, countries over in Africa and, like, Ethiopia and stuff like that. Like, you know, you see the commercials, people, like, weighing, like, 80 pounds, you know. So you got to be grateful and thankful. You know, so this country does have a lot of great things to offer, you know. We got to be mindful of that, and we got to respect one another, understand this is a country of equal rights, equal opportunity. There's going to be racism and stuff, but, you know, I mean, you don't want to be a part of that. Like you see that other people are racist, so now you want to be racist. No, now you're a part of the problem. You're not part of the solution.
Right.
You know? So that doesn't help at all. Like, you know, Zimmerman got off, so I'm gonna go find a white boy or a Hispanic to beat up. You know, let's go find somebody to jump. Like, that just takes us like 50 years back in the past, 100 years back in the past. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous. You know, I'm not standing. Like, I'm not somebody that's gonna be supportive of that type of behavior. You know, I'm not gonna condone it from any white, black, anybody. Like, you know, we all just need to behave ourselves, you know, rationally. You know, we need to rationalize. You know, we need to just, you know, we just need to cut it out, man. We want to, you know, clean things up. It's only going to happen with unity and understand that we're all here and there's nothing you can do about it. So deal with it, you know. That's just it. You know what I'm saying, Disney? Like, just deal with it.
Yep.
Like, you know, all that violence and outbreaks and stuff ain't going to solve nothing. It never has. What has it ever solved?
Nope.
What has rioting ever solved?
But that's how they were back in the day, too. I mean, that's how they were back in the day, doing the riots and fighting, and it just takes you back in the day, just like you said, 50 years ago. Like, that's how it's starting to be with this whole case. It's starting to be like back in the day. Like, it's going to get worse. I hate to say it, but it's going to get worse. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Now, people are getting hurt now. I mean, people don't got no choice but to just, you know, just get over things and move on. Because it's a couple of, like, stories that's going on right now that are, like, touching people to add on to the already fuel that's in the fire from the Zimmerman verdict. And, you know, that doesn't help. But at least, you know, from my knowledge, as of yet, I haven't seen a lot of mainstream media coverage on these cases, because it would just be a lot worse, you know. And yeah, it's just time to move on, and you know, it's just time for people to just chill out and just start talking. Let's start talking. I mean, call a radio show, call a talk radio show, invent, talk to your friends, get together, have a talk, you know. And you know, it's ways to go about venting without, like, acting violently, because that never solves anything. And, but also, you know, then you got to look at, you know, people that kind of stir things up. You know, like, for instance, if you're, you know, feeling a type of way about the verdict, and then somebody calls you an N-word, I mean, you already got that tension built up. You might flip out. And if a person flips out in that instance, I can't blame them. I mean, some people are really kind of just aggravated in such a way that they're pushed to act out. And if that's the case, I look at that as, like, you know, I can kind of find a justification in that. You know?
Right.
Like, everybody got a responsibility, you know? So don't add fuel to the fire, you know?
But just like we say, like, it's really the media's fault. Like, it's really the media. The media is doing this. They are causing conflict. By having this shit all aired out. Like, they have all of this aired out on TV. Like, if that's what's causing it, if they didn't have it all aired out like that, it probably wouldn't be as bad. And then started, you know, throwing the whole race and all that in there, then it wouldn't be as bad. People wouldn't look at it like it was this whole racial thing. They would look at it like it should be looked at. So that's why it's getting bad now. Like, here is, like, it's diverse where I live. It's diverse, but if you walk in here and you, like where you live at, you say there's not a lot of racism or nothing, but if you come here just for a day, you would be so shocked. Even though it's so diverse and you see interracial couples and all that, it's still a lot of racism out here. Like, a lot. I remember when I first came out here, like, they had, like, a whole bunch of, like, white boys. There was this truck, and they had a whole bunch of white boys just driving around with the rebel flag in the back of their truck. There's also my friend, she showed me a place where they literally have, like, KKK and all that. Like, they literally have that over, like, there's a house full of KKK. Like, that's creepy. That's really creepy. And now, like, over here, there's more African Americans starting to move over here. So now it's going to cause more conflict over here, too. Like, literally how this whole town is set up is, like, a lot of the African-Americans is on one side of the town, and then you have the white people on the other side of town that live. That's how it is. Like, you drive through here, and you'll see, okay, why is there no black people over here? That's because this is the white side of town. Then you drive on down, and that's the black side of town. That's where all the black people hang out and all that and live. It's crazy. It's like it's split.
And then white people here, black people here, Spanish there, like that. Like,
Yeah.
So basically your town is segregated is what you're saying.
Yeah, you might as well say that, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of places all over the country like that. And, you know, I don't know. It's crazy. Like, I don't think it should be that way. But look, if being that way is going to keep peace, then let it be that way. Because if you got a white family, let's say a father and a mother that are like, you know, we don't want you to tell their kids, like, we don't want you dating. Don't bring nobody home if they aren't of white descent. Like, don't bring home no Mexican, no Puerto Rican, no Asian, no blacks. Like, and if they feel that way, you know, but they stand to themselves, I mean, you know, that is obviously, you know, definitely prejudice, racism, whatever you want to call it. But as long as they stay in their own lane and keep to themselves, then just it is what it is, you know. As long as they're not bothering nobody. If that's how they feel and that's the move they give to their family, you don't agree with it, but as long as they ain't bothering nobody, you just let it be, you know? So sometimes maybe it is in best interest that people that are prejudiced and racist kind of stay in their own lane and things kind of be segregated if it's going to mean that the peace is going to be kept. Because you have everybody together, like white and black and Hispanic neighbors, and all hate each other, and they come out and they saying crazy stuff to each other, and they so close to each other with an arm reach, and it's like, you know, just saying hateful, mean things, even if it's just an outburst not directed at that person, you know, like if a white man makes a racial slur towards blacks in general, and a black man is standing right there, their neighbors, I mean, you're going to say something back. I mean, even if you're not looking at him, he's just saying in general, like, you know, if he says, like, I hate blacks, I hate them. You know, and the black man is standing right there and is like, well, what'd you say? You know, what'd you say? Like, how dare you say that? Like, who you think you're talking? Like, you know, and then tension. But if that white man says that and he's in his own segregated community and there's no blacks around to respond, then, I mean, at least there won't be any, you know, retaliation. It won't lead to nothing. You
right.
know? It won't lead to nothing. So, in a way, segregation can actually actually benefit because people are going to be people and feel the way they feel anyway. You know, we can all sit here and preach morals and how we feel and values and all of that stuff, but people are going to feel how they feel anyway. That would be just like violent people, right? Like, let's say a person mm-hmm. they were just violent in nature. Like, they had nothing was positive about them. They didn't have any positive intentions in life. You know, if that person or those people could have their own area in the town and they stayed in that area and never came over to where the innocent people are that want to do good, then, I mean, it would matter, but definitely wouldn't matter as much because it's like it's violent people all acting on other violent people. It's like put them on their own island. You know what I'm saying? Isn't they like have them away from everybody else. If you are racist and you got racial tensions, like you should be in your own, or you should be segregated way on the other side of town somewhere, your own boundaries, stand to yourself, minding your own business. You know,
right.
And that will keep like a lot of racial tension and, you know, just a whole bunch of unnecessary drama from happening. So that's just how I feel. Personally.
Yeah, I agree because. If I feel like if we did have like a mixture, like in my neighborhood, it's mostly white, and I feel like for instance, like this is mostly white, and like when we had like a few black people in this neighborhood that moved here, all of a sudden people people thought that, like, they kept looking out their windows and everything. Yeah, because they were, like, they were scared. They thought that they were going to steal something from them. And who these weird people walking around the block, what are they trying to do? Like, they live here. Like, what do you mean? They live here. Like, they can walk around the block if they want to. And the sad thing about it is that the white people that live down the street from me, they're drug dealers. Like, they're drug dealers, but they would never think that. They would never, ever think that. Like, we literally, like, that whole block is, like, nothing but drug dealers, and they're all white. But people would never guess that. They think, oh, they're just a, you know, they're just a family that lives down the street. They keep the peace, and but they would never guess that. They think, you know, the black people that live here that are the drug dealers and all that. But it's really the ones down the street that are doing that stuff. It's crazy. That's why you don't see a lot of black people living in this neighborhood. Because people would look at you weird, straight up. They would look at you really weird. Like, what are you doing on this side of town? Like, shouldn't you be living on the other side? That's how they look at it. But it keeps the peace, though. It does keep the peace. Because I think that if they did come and people started moving out here, that it would get crazy out here. I think it would. So it's kind of actually better that we are, that, you know, it is kind of separate. Keeps the peace, I tell you that much.
Sometimes being segregated can keep the peace, but it's crazy that the way, you know, black people are viewed in the public's eyes, like, you know, like, if a person is black and if they got on, their pants are a little baggy, or if they got on a hoodie, then they're necessarily a hoodlum or a drug dealer, you know, like, and it's always talked about, like, you know, a black man shot somebody, a black man did this, a black man did that. You know, it is kind of crazy how, like, you know, and that's the reason why a lot of, for those people, you know, I've been seeing, reading a lot of stuff online and stuff. A lot of people feel like, you know, black African Americans are playing the victim role. But if you look at, like, the news and stuff, you do hear, it's all you really hear about is, like, crime involving blacks. Like, that really is what you hear about. And mm-hmm. as soon as you're walking down the street minding your own business, you're automatically looked at. If you're black, and if you don't have on a business suit, then you look like, you know, you're up to no good. Like, you're being stopped. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I'm driving and I get pulled over with no real probable cause, like, no real reason. Like, you know, officers feel like we don't know the law anyway, so they can say anything. Your tail light's out. No, it's not. What are you talking about? My tail light's not out. I thought your tail light was out. Now, I'm an officer. Shut up. And listen, let me see your license and registration. Oh, did you say something smart? You got a problem with me, mister? You want to step out of the vehicle? Like, it's like, oh, boy, you know. So, and you deal with that type of stuff. You know, like, just if it's like four black people riding in a vehicle, you get pulled over. So this is stuff that you really deal with. I've experienced it. I know. Like, I actually had, I think I said this on a previous show, like, I had a white police officer called me boy before, and I, like, zapped out on him. And then, of course, he threatened to hit me with his nightstick or something. But I still zapped out on him. I said what I had to say. I didn't back down. At the end of the day, I felt good for standing up, you know, because that's a serious thing right there. Who knows how many other people that, you know, he used that approach with, and, you know, racial slurs and attacks, you know, and using being an officer of the law to his advantage, you know, to degrade black people. I feel like I have a responsibility for everybody to step up. I mean, there's a responsibility. Like, I'm doing this for everybody. I gotta say something. I cannot let this officer do this to me, say this to me. That affects people. Like, that don't even just affect black people. I mean, you got white people who are married to black people. Like, you know, families, a black family and a white family are to, you know, come together because of marriage of mutual family members. Like, you know, like things like mm-hmm. that. Like, you know, everybody doesn't, you know, everybody isn't racist, like I was saying. So, like, you know, you got even white people that, like, don't stand for that, that hate that, you know. You got all cultures and stuff that, you know, don't like that, you know, that are totally
right.
against it. And so I feel like you do have a responsibility to, and that was my responsibility right there at that point, to speak up. And I did. And if I had a chance to, if I had to do it again, I wouldn't want to be in that position. Because who's to say he wouldn't, a police getter can get away with murder, literally. You know, now, God forbid, he knocked me upside my head and just said that I attacked him. I mean, who's there? It was just his partner. His partner said, you can see the look on his partner's face like, oh, I can't believe you, you idiot. Like, he seemed like he was so embarrassed, like he just wanted to shake his head, but he ain't say nothing. Now, you know, like I said, God forbid, he knocked me upside my head with that, you know, with his little nightstick or, you know, anything, you know, physically attack me, whatever. You know, I mean, good luck for me trying to file a suit against him. Maybe in a couple of years I'll end up, you know, seeing some, you know, like actually getting some money or, you know, actually seeing some results from it. But, you know, the odds ain't really that much in your favor, you know? So, like, it was a huge responsibility for me to speak my mind. I'm glad I did.
Yeah. I remember, like, a situation where I was a little younger. My dad had this truck. And I remember he was picking me up from school or something like that. And I was, like, 8 or 9. Had this ugly truck. But he loved it. And we were just riding. It was me, my dad, and my sister. My sister was like 2 at the time. And we're riding around, and we're going on our way home. And a police officer, he stops us. Now, he's white, of course. And I remember, you know, my dad getting out of the truck. And he was like, so, officer, like, why did you stop me? You know, I wasn't speeding or nothing like that. He was like, listen here, boy. And I have never seen my dad get so mad in his life. Like, that was just, like, he just totally lost it on the officer. Like, he went off because he felt disrespected. And then he was just like, and then the officer was just like, I didn't mean nothing by it or nothing like that. I don't know what race you are because, you know, my father is light-skinned. But you can obviously tell that he is black. Like, you can tell, even though he's light-skinned, you can tell that he's black. He, the officer, knew what he was saying. And my dad was like, so if I was white, would you have called me boy? First of all, you pulled me over for no kind of reason. What was the reason for you even pulling me over? You don't have a reason. We all have our seatbelts on. I'm not speeding. So what was your reason for pulling me over? No, officer didn't have no reason for it. He just pulled him over. Like, for no reason. I was just like, I had so much respect for my dad because he could have not said anything at all and not stood up for himself and just kept his mouth shut because knowing that he's a police officer and he could have got locked up for that. But he stood his ground. Like, I was really, really shocked. And then, like, out here, like, I don't know, like, where you live at, but even, like, the black officers, like, they're racist, too. They're racist of their own kind. Like, they will...
Yeah,
they
that
will,
does.
Yeah.
That does definitely happen. I've seen it and witnessed it. You know what I call that? I call that self-inflicting racism or self-racism. Like, that's what I call it. Like, self-hatred. Like, it's self-hatred. Like, you know, you hate your own kind. Like, that's crazy. But I've seen it. It does happen, you know. it's kind of weird to see it, but it's kind of different from, like, you know, usually from, like, let's say a white guy or cop that's racist versus black. It's different in its own way, but it's still racism nonetheless. And
right.
One isn't really better than the other, like, you know, is kind of crazy. I mean, but to be profiled because of what you have on, how you dress, you know, what car you're driving, how many people are in the car, like, I mean, it's racial profiling, which ain't nothing but racism, an act of racism, basically, you know, because that's just like how the Zimmerman thing, right? Like, Trayvon Martin, the bottom line is this. If George Zimmerman had not have racially profiled, you know, Trayvon Martin, you know, then all of the other stuff would never happen. It wouldn't be nothing to talk about. It wouldn't be no media coverage. None of it would have ever happened. So let's say forget for a second what happened after that. We all know he got out of the car, which was that alone. To me, should be grounds of some type of punishment alone, because your actions caused somebody to get killed.
Right.
You know, so that alone. But I mean, just the fact that, you know, you're not an officer of the law. All right, you see somebody you don't recognize, you call the police. All right, that's where it is. That's it. Then you go about your business. Like, you're not an officer of the law. Like, you know, like, if he would not profile Trayvon Martin, none of that stuff would have happened. None of it would have happened. Case closed. And I think that fact alone is grounds for some type of punishment. That's the reason why people are so upset. That's the reason why blacks are so upset. Whites that are in support of the Trayvon Martin family are so upset. Like,
right.
Everybody else. Like, that's the reason why, because it's just the principle that this young man, 17 years old, ends up being killed because of being profiled, because he was profiled, you know, and the actions caused him to be killed. The actions of George Zimmerman caused Trayvon Martin to be killed, you know. So
yeah.
Everybody's stuck on, well, you know, Trayvon Martin was attacking him, and he thought he was going to lose his life, you know. And you, before you even get to that, you know, first of all, none of us was there. Trayvon Martin isn't here to tell us what happened. But the one thing you got to look at, you got to start from the beginning. When you start a book, you can't start from the middle. You can't start from the end. You got to start from the beginning, you know, to break down the full story. And everybody's got a responsibility. That's just like, you know, like when you're guilty by accessory, you know, guilty by association. Like, if somebody goes to murder somebody, but you're just in the car, but you ain't had nothing to do with it, and you boom, 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 then they run in the car, and like, oh, pull off, and you're not the driver, you're in the back seat, but they pull off. But at that time, you got a quick conscious decision to make. I want to get out this car because I don't know, you know, I don't want to have nothing to do with this, and the police come, and I don't want to end up being arrested. You know, you got a conscious decision to make. And you decide, you're so caught in the moment, I guess they got to pull off. Okay, well, you don't really got time to think, all right, you just pull off. All right, well, oh, man, I ain't had nothing to do with this. I feel crazy, but I ain't had nothing to do with it. So, I mean, what am I supposed to do? I'm not going to stay there and have the police come accusing me of it and locking me up, so I left with them. Guess what, though? If you leave that crime scene and don't say nothing and the police ends up having to come arrest people, they're coming for you. You're going to get locked up because your actions played a role in it. Like, you know, you could have stayed around. You could have stayed there. And you could have told the police what happened. They could have been in an arrest sooner or anything. Like, they're going to look at it like that. Your actions led to it. Same with, like, all right, for a better example, if you're the getaway driver, you know, you ain't do it, and you ain't know that the person was going to do it, but they get in the car, like, pull off. I just shot somebody. Like, oh, man. Oh, what? What do you mean? Pull off. The police going to be coming in. Oh, all right, let me pull off. You might get in that person, and, you know, that person ended up shooting somebody, killing somebody, right? Hypothetically speaking. You're likely to get just as harsh a punishment as that person because your actions.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? Just your actions.
Yep.
You had a choice to make, you know? You had a choice to make, especially if consciously. Now, another example, it's consciously you knew what that person was going to do, and you just say, I'm the driver, I don't have nothing to do with it, but you got beef with that person. So I'm going to, and the person's like, all right, I'm going to kill this person. The only way I'm going to be able to do it is if you got to be my driver. You got to have my back. You're my man. You're my homie. You're my best friend. You're my whatever. You know, you're my ace. I need you on this. We got beef. One of us is going to go in. It's going to be me. I'm about to go do them in. All right, you know what? You're my friend. Friends stick together, ride together. I'm going to take you. You take him. He does it. And you're a getaway driver. But then when you get called up by the police, and it's like, well, I didn't have nothing to do with it. I was just driving. And, of course, you probably lie and say, I ain't know. But you're guilty because your actions caused that person to be killed. Because had you not been driving that car, that person wouldn't have had a getaway vehicle to do it. So even though you weren't the trigger man, you're guilty. And how many times have we seen these cases on, you know, these cases, these trials where people are guilty by association and sometimes get even more time than the person that actually did it sometimes? You know, your actions have led to someone being killed. Now, I know the Zimmerman situation is a little different, but I'm just saying, I mean, you profile somebody, you got out of your vehicle after you was harassing and stalking them, following them, a fight breaks out, you know, and somebody ends up dying because of your decision-making, because of your bad decision-making. A 17-year-old is gone. He won't have the chance to be whatever he want to be in life. Who knows what that young man would have grown up to be. He doesn't have that opportunity now. His family is grieving because of that. This is because of you. This is because of George Zimmerman. Like, I feel like, you know, you got to pay for your actions in life. Like, what type of example was that setting?
It is.
It's all a part of, you know, dealing with this whole racial profile and racism in America right now. Like, you know, people don't appreciate that. You know, now I still stand on what I said earlier. I still don't agree with people acting out violently and wanting to be attacking people because, you know, that's, all that stuff is just ridiculous to me. But I understand the pain, you know, because if it was the other way around, you know, and a grown black man had did that to a 17-year-old white teenager, I mean, can you imagine? Like, I mean, it would have been pandemonium. And, you know, I just don't think the verdict would have played out the same. I'm sorry to say, but I don't think the verdict would have played out the same. Can you picture this?
Nope. That guy would have been guilty. They would have sent his butt to jail. Sent him to jail. If it was the other way around.
Probably would have found the way to make a first-degree murder.
Yeah.
No doubt.
It could be the same situation. The young white boy was wearing a hoodie and all that could have been. And now then you gotta think about it, like, what if it was Zimmerman, okay, and it was a young white boy with a hoodie on? Do you even think that Zimmerman would have even thought that this little boy was up to no good? No, he wouldn't have. He wouldn't have because he was black and he had his hoodie on and all that. He thought he was suspicious. So basically he was saying that any black male that has us walking at night with a hoodie on, he's up to no good. That's basically what he was saying. It's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
He was definitely profiling. He was definitely profiling. And when I was watching, like, the Dr. Phil show, and he actually had his parents on there, and they were talking about it, and he was like, and the father, you know, that was his problem. His problem was the fact that, first of all, Zimmerman never even apologized. And then second was they profiled his son. He was a, you know, who, just like his father said, he was just a young boy going to the store, minding his own business. He was a good boy, minding his own business. you know, getting whatever he needed to get and going back home. That was his problem, that he got killed for no reason because somebody wanted to profile him. A 17-year-old boy. Like, that's crazy.
It's like, what reason do you have to get out of your car unless you're looking for trouble? Like,
exactly.
If you're following him and you think he's up to no good, he looks like he's on drugs. Okay, so let the police come handle it. Stay in the car. Like, why would you get out unless you're looking for trouble? Because you say you see him walk somewhere. You need an address. Oh, okay, so you need to find an address. So you needed that bad. That was his reason for getting out the car. You need to find an address to tell the police to come to you. So somebody that you think is on drugs and up to no good, and you want to, like, risk encountering them, and you're not an officer of the law, like, why would you want to do that? It's like he's looking for trouble. So I think it's loopholes in his story. Like, I think – I know this is ridiculous to me. Like, his story is just – it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that that story is, like, sold to the jury in a way that, like, you know, he is, you know – he's free of all charges. Like, he's not responsible for the outcome of this, of what happened to Trayvon Martin. Like, that is crazy. It's absolutely absurd to me. And that's the reason why people are all this pandemonium and stuff, you know? But you got to look at the media's coverage on this stuff, not knowing what the outcome is going to be, you know? And, you know, the fact that he was able to walk free is freaking mind-boggling, isn't it? Like, it really is. And then the juror B-37, like, when she spoke out and the things that she had to say was just like, it was like complete bias. And if you look at it, like, five jurors white, one Hispanic. Well, guess what? Juror Zimmerman is what? White and Hispanic.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's, you know, that looks kind of like favoritism. Now, you don't know the jury personally, but, I mean, just looking at that alone, just the odds are stacked against you. You know what I'm saying? For it to not be any African-American jurors on that. But I don't really know. We were talking about that on the verdict coverage of the verdict show that we had. Like, I'm not sure how it works. Like, I got one friend who was incarcerated, and he told me that he got to choose, I think he said it was 12 jurors, and he and his attorney, you know, chose six, and the state chose six. I believe that's what he told me. But I don't know how it works from state to state. I don't know. I'm assuming that the defense chose probably all of them.
Probably.
I don't know if he chose all of them or it was 3-3. I don't know how it worked. But I'm just saying, the fact that it was five whites and one Hispanic, I mean, that right there alone, you got to convince this jury of six non-blacks that this non-black is guilty of killing a black person. I mean,
now, honestly,
crazy.
Now I feel like if they did have some black jurors on that it would be just like the Jodi Arias case. Like, they wouldn't be able to come to a decision. Yeah, because you know what? They would find him guilty, and then the others would find him not guilty. It would be a mistrial. You're right. Like, and that's probably why they didn't choose them. If he did have a right to choose the jurors, that's probably why he didn't. Because he knew this was going to be a racism case. Like, it was going to be something like that. Because it was a black male that got killed.
That's crazy. I wonder, like, if Trayvon Martin was 17, right? I wonder if he was 12, mm-hmm. would it have been the same outcome? Oh, well, I was just fearful of my life. All the 12-year-old hoodlum was going to beat him to death. What if Trayvon Martin was the same size but 12 years old? Do you think the outcome would have been different?
I don't think so.
You know what's crazy? I don't think so either. I really don't. It's 12-year-old, and it would have been the same outcome. I really think so. That's crazy.
But Zimmerman says that he thought that Trayvon Martin was, like, around the same age as he was. That's what he said. He thought that Trayvon Martin was around the same age as he was. He didn't know that he was 17 years old. He did not know that.
And when George Zimmerman was explaining his, when he was talking about what happened, and he said once he shot, he squeezed the trigger one time. He didn't know if he actually shot Trayvon Martin. And Trayvon Martin was like, you got that or something like that. And then kind of put his hands up and eased up. And George Zimmerman kind of got him off of him and kind of put his hands behind his, you know, back, kind of put him in a submission type of position, like spread his arms or whatever. You know, like thinking like he's the police, like he's a vigilante, police officer, you know. And he never once said, you know, like, well, once I realized, because obviously if you shot him, you see that if it's light enough, if you, I understand it's dark, but if it's light enough for you to see that he's black, remember he said he seen that he was black from his car. He was still in his car when he said,
right,
Mama is black. So you can see him enough to see it, he's black, then you can see that he's shot. He didn't say, I realized he was shot, and I was like, oh, we got to call 911 and try to get an answer. Nobody even thought to speak on that. Like, nobody is amazing. You know, like people, when they speak on it, they're not speaking about that. But that's a very significant factor right there. Like, he didn't say anything, oh, we got to get him an ambulance. Oh, I can't believe this had to happen. Like, why did he have to attack me? I can't believe I had to shoot him. Oh, I feel so bad. Like, he could have used that approach, you know? And I don't think people would, you know, hate him so much if he did use that approach, even if it was, like, you know, even if it was real or not. You know, nobody would know. Only he would know if it was real or not. But if he would have used that approach, you know, I don't think people would hate him as much. Like, it was just like, oh, well, a young black hoodlum attacked me, so I had to shoot him dead. And they asked him, did he have any regrets? He said no. If he had to do it again, he would. So it was like no sympathy, no regret, no anything. Like, no, well, I, you know, instead of, you know, like, I just wish it could have played out different. I just wish, I would not want that to play out like that again. He could have said it in a way that, like, I would defend myself if I had to, but I would hate to have to be in that position. He did not. He showed no remorse. People have to understand that this is why people are so upset. And then that's why, because of these factors, you know, this to be covered, you know, people knew, like, this video's on YouTube, like, before the trial even started, and people are saying, this is going to cause racial tension. It's going to be a race war. That's all you hear. It's going to be a race war. It's going to be a race war. War. Like, race war. Like, you keep hearing that because people knew the tension, you know, because you look at that type, those type of factors, and it's like, man, it can make you feel a type of way. Like, it really can.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like, how could you not have any sympathy? And we understand if you had to do what you had to do, if what you said is how it really happened, but the fact that you show no sympathy shows that now that makes it really seem like you really were, like, you know, you had bad intentions and you were really profiling him because he was black, and you really have a bias towards young black males, like, you know, because how can you not have sympathy? Like, you know, God forbid it ever a situation like, you know, that had to occur and I was involved, right? I would feel bad. My actions would show if I had to defend myself, and because of that, somebody, first of all, I would never profile anybody, so it wouldn't be that type of, it wouldn't occur that way. But let's say something that occurred that led to someone being killed. And if I was the one that had to do it in a desperate attempt for my own life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would feel bad. I would still feel like I wish it didn't have to happen. Like, I wish, like, regardless of what, I was just like, I wish it didn't have to happen. Like, I wish I didn't have to take this person's life. Like, I wish that person didn't do what they did. You could have said that, and you didn't. Like, you know, so that's little small things like that could be the difference in a couple of, like, millions of people's, like, viewpoints on things. Like, you know what? I don't like the fact that it had to happen, but he does seem like he really regretted it. You know what? I can't say I hate him. I don't agree. But now people are like, I hate him because he doesn't like black people, and a young black man died because of it. You see what I'm saying, Nizzy Nay?
Yeah.
The small things. That little type of stuff does count. You know what I'm saying? So that was, like, my issue. That's my main issue. Like, no remorse. Like, really? And you know a young black man is buried because of your actions?
Yep.
That's my main thing. And that's people need to understand that that's a lot of people's the issue that a lot of people have with this. People have to understand. You know, I still don't agree with, like, this whole rioting thing, acting with violence. But I'm just saying, you got to understand what's, you know, the factors in the situation. You got to look at everything as a whole. You know? And, I mean, to this day, we still don't know for sure who was screaming. We don't know. You know? But then Zimmerman doesn't have to get questioned. So, hey, I mean,
he said
it was him, but he didn't have to get on the stand in the trial.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a big break for the defense, for their client to not have to get on the stand.
Yep. He should have been, they should have made him get on the stand.
Something happened.
But then again, it
something
probably
would have
hurt their case.
Something happened. No, I don't remember what it was, but something definitely happened, the reason why he didn't have to. Well, hold up. All right, so it's that's the thing about law. It's so much. Like, if you're not a law expert, I mean, there's the roll of the dice on trying to speak on it. You might be right, but then you could be wrong. Sometimes different people say different things. So I did hear that, like, you know, you have a right to remain silent, which I guess means that you don't have to testify, you know, in your own defense. Like, you know, but I don't know to what degree. Like, I don't know. Like, it's so much other stuff that comes along the play. So, I'm just going to stay away from that because I don't know how that works. All we know is that he didn't have to. I mean, he didn't have to, and, you know, it was a big break for the defense, and they ultimately prevailed. Now, this juror, B37, says she feels like she knows George Zimmerman personally. I mean, that one statement alone said, you know, from listening to that trial, she felt like she knew Trayvon, George Zimmerman personally. And she doesn't feel like she knew Trayvon Martin because he's not around to speak on his own behalf. She don't. Only thing she pretty much knows is the things they spoke on, which weren't necessarily positive things. So, like, how do you feel about juror B37 speaking out, saying that she felt like she knew George Zimmerman personally before she even went to go deliberate? She felt like she knew him personally. Keep in mind that she didn't get to see all of the stuff. You know, the jurors aren't allowed to follow the media. They're not supposed to be on Twitter, any social network. They're not supposed to talk to family members about it. The only thing they know is what they see in the trial. So,
right.
How do you feel about that statement? She feels like she knew him personally, like she had a personal connection with him, almost like he's like a, you know, a good standing citizen.
But how, though? He didn't even get on a stand and speak. It's not like he got on a stand and spoke or anything like that. I mean, of course, I mean, she could have had a personal connection with Trayvon Martin's family and friends. What about what they're going through? If she spoke as if Zimmerman was the victim. But Zimmerman is alive. He's not the one that got killed. Like, she acts like he's going through a lot. Like, he just, you know, went through this big tragedy. Like, what about Trayvon Martin's family?
That's, you know what?
Like, I don't understand that.
I'm going to read some notes that, you know, some statements from juror B37, and at any time that you feel away and you want to, you know, speak on something I said, you can just interrupt me and say how you feel about that one statement, and then we'll move on. We can do it like that.
All right.
So she says she thinks it was George Zimmerman's voice yelling for help on the 911 tape, and all but one juror believed it was George Zimmerman because it was evidence that he had gotten beaten. Now, these are all quotes from her. Like, this is the actual thing she said, word for word. She said...
I heard the, like, I heard the 911 tape, because I watched it. There was, like, a little interview on YouTube, and they actually played it. It was
right.
Not Zimmerman. No, it was not Zimmerman. It was not him.
A lot of people think it was. Obviously, she definitely did, because that obviously played a role in her decision making. And she said, what was you saying?
I don't understand why he would be yelling help.
Saying because he was in fear for his life, but he got a gun.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got a gun, but he's yelling help. I don't know. It's crazy. You know, it's... Well, anyway, says there was one juror who didn't necessarily think it was George Zimmerman yelling for help. She didn't think it was Trayvon. She just said it could have been Trayvon. She wanted to give everybody absolute out of being guilty. She and everyone else were sure it was Zimmerman. It was Zimmerman's voice because of material witness, and doesn't think it was a doubt that everyone else thought it was Zimmerman's voice. Says she felt sorry for Rachel Gentile because she didn't think she really wanted to be there due to her communication skills and her lack of education. So once again, these are all things that juror B37 said. Said Zimmerman shouldn't have got out of his car, but it's his right to carry a gun, and anyone's right to carry a gun as long as as you use it responsibly.
Wow.
What do you think about that? He shouldn't have got out of the car, but it's his right to carry a gun as long as he uses it responsibly. And because of him getting out the car, someone's killed. So, like, how do you feel about that?
Like, if you felt like he shouldn't have got out of the car, then, and you think that he should have a gun on him, them two don't even add up together. That doesn't make no sense to me.
With a loaded firearm, got out of the car for somebody you think that's causing the neighborhood trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Why would you even get out of the car in the first place if you were fear? I would be sitting up in that car just waiting for somebody else to come.
She,
I ain't going nowhere. If I'm fearing for my life, he speaks as if, like, this little boy literally was at his window while he was sitting in the car, had a gun up there or something. Like, he was held hostage or something like that. Like, that little boy wasn't even worried about him. Trayvon Martin was scared. He was scared more than anything. Well, I would be scared if I was walking and I see a cop car. I already know that, you know, police have guns on them, sometimes security have guns on them just in case. I would be scared.
And you know what? A lot of people view George Zimmerman from how he seemed in the trial, but think back on how he looked before the trial, when he was first, when it first happened, all of that facial hair and stuff. He did look like he could have... Like, if you would have shown me a picture of him and said he's a pedophile, I wouldn't have been surprised. He did look kind of like, you know, like he could have been a suspect. Like, he kind of like, you know, so me being picture yourself being a 17-year-old and the old George Zimmerman look before they tried to make him look all preppy and innocent. Like, the way he looked with that, all that facial hair and stuff, I mean, you're 17 years old. I mean, you know, remember Rachel Gentile was like, Trayvon Martin said, I don't know, I think he's like a pedophile or a rapist or something like that, she said, that Trayvon Martin said. And if you think about it, and you look at him, it's like, wow, like, you would, if somebody, like I said, if somebody would have said that he's a registered sex offender, and I looked at him, I'd have been like, you know, some type of perv or, you know, criminal or something. He just had like a spooky look to him. Like, he looked more... like suspect to me than Trayvon Martin did. Trayvon Martin looked like a 17-year-old young man. George Zimmerman is the one that, if anything, had like a look that was like, you know, of course he looks different with his you know, and I think that was all planned to give him that presentation in a trial. But, you know, the way he did look at first was like, picture yourself being 17, Izzy Nay, and see this guy with all this facial hair looking kind of like just staring at you, just driving behind you, looking at you. You're going to be like, what in the world? You know?
Yeah, you'd be scared.
And if you had a gun on you, he got out of the car and came in, you might would have shot him or something, you know?
Yeah, I would have took off running.
You know what I'm saying? It's crazy.
Yeah. I just don't understand. I really don't. What she was the only juror that spoke out?
She's the only one. She's the only one. Nobody else, to my knowledge, has spoke out yet. And she said that she thinks George told the truth, and she always like referred to him as George. So you see the, you know, like, you know, she's not saying like Zimmerman, she's saying George. Like, you know, you call somebody by their first name when you know them, you know.
Right.
She thinks George told the truth. She's sure there were some fabrications and enhancements, but she thinks it pretty much happened the way Zimmerman said it happened. Like, you're saying you pretty much thought it happened the way Zimmerman said it happened, but you're pretty sure there were some fabrications and enhancements. Well, that means that it didn't happen. I don't know. You agree, isn't it? Like, that means you don't totally agree. You don't really agree if you're saying you think there were fabrications and enhancements, but you pretty much think it happened the way Zimmerman said it happened. Isn't that contradictory a little bit, you think? To say that? Is he Nay?
Yeah.
Like, that's, I don't know, that's just kind of crazy to me. Like, I just can't picture me telling, like, okay, like me saying in that situation, I'm pretty sure there were some fabrications and enhancements, but I think he told the truth. I think what he said was accurate. How do you just say like two things that totally contradict one another? I don't know, Nizzy Nay. I'm just sensing some bias. I don't know. Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And says she thinks Trayvon Martin may have reached for George Zimmerman's gun, but it doesn't matter if Trayvon reached for the gun or not, because the fact that Zimmerman was getting beat up and felt his life was being threatened gave him the right to use it regardless.
I don't understand. I wonder if, like, all the jurors feel like this.
I wonder, too. A lot of the other jurors didn't really want to speak out the way she did. I mean, keep in mind, they kept her identity concealed. Like, you know, you just see, like, a, you know how they interview somebody that want their identity protected, and you just see, like, a dark shadow of them, and that's it? That's all you see during the interview. You can't see a face or anything. I mean, you know, that was wise of her because, you know, with all the controversy behind it, I mean, why wouldn't you? But, I mean, I don't know, man. She goes on to say she thinks Trayvon threw the first punch because of the evidence on the sidewalk where George said he was punched. There was evidence of his keys and flashlight on the ground, and she thinks that's where Trayvon struck Zimmerman. She thinks the roles changed. She thinks George got in a little too deep where she shouldn't have been there, but Trayvon decided he wasn't going to let Zimmerman scare him and get the one over up on him and got mad and attacked Zimmerman. She goes on to say she believed the animation of the defense was credible. Did you see that, Nizzy Nay, when they showed that little animation of what happened?
No, I didn't.
They showed an animation, like a 3D animation thing, like where, like a computer simulation of like Trayvon Martin walking up to Zimmerman and punching him, and then they showed Trayvon Martin slamming Zimmerman's, you know, head into the pavement. Like, I don't know, it's crazy. They actually showed it, like the defense showed a 3D animation. It's like, oh, this is what we think happened. And I don't know, I'm just saying, me personally, like, I'm not going to pay attention to no 3D animation because, of course, the defense is like, okay, well, we're going to do anything to make our client look innocent, but what does a 3D animation solve when it's coming from a biased side? Because whether you're the defense or the prosecution, even one presenting something like that is biased automatically towards their client, is going to make it look a way, a type of way, like in favor of their side. So to believe, to say you believe the 3D animation film is like, I don't know. Would you picture yourself being a juror? Like, would you like want to like use a 3D animation film of what happens, like to judge whether you think what you think happened? Like, can you imagine that? Like, you're watching a 3D film. And it's like, okay, well, this is what happened because this is what the defense says. So, okay, cool.
No, you shouldn't be able to use that because that's just one side. That's just what he said. That doesn't necessarily make it true. I mean, Trayvon Martin is not alive to say his side of the story, to show you what he, like, what happened in his eyes. It's like all this whole case, it was in Zimmerman's eyes because he's alive. So, of course, everybody is going to be on his side because he's the one that's alive. And Trayvon
right.
Martin can't really stand up for himself.
That's, I don't
it's
know.
Not right.
That was kind of crazy. Like, I'm surprised I was even, like, allowed, you know. All right, so moving on, I didn't realize we were actually closing in on the end of the show. It's crazy. So moving on, she said she believed the animation of the defense was credible, and when asked if she thinks Trayvon Martin's parents' testimony was credible, she said she thinks Trayvon Martin's parents and anything a she thinks Trayvon Martin's parents said anything a mother and father would say, just like Zimmerman's mother and father, and agreed that both sets of parents' testimonies canceled each other out in her mind. And this is all significant because, keep in mind, this is the one juror that's speaking out. And everything that happened with this, like, is a cause to, like, you know, the whole racial outlet and, you know, all of this crazy stuff that's happening right now. You know, so all of this stuff is like, you know, the stuff that this juror is saying is very significant. It was pretty important for her to know in her mind who was the one yelling for help, because whoever was crying for help was in fear for their life. Doesn't think Zimmerman racially profiled Trayvon Martin. Let's stop right there. Let me repeat. Let's bring that back. Doesn't think Zimmerman racially profiled or profiled Trayvon Martin, and doesn't think race played a role in Zimmerman's decision and his view on Trayvon Martin's suspicion. She just thinks circumstances caused Zimmerman to think he may be a robber or trying to do something bad in the neighborhood because of all that had gone on previously. She thinks if Trayvon Martin was someone Spanish, white, Asian, etc., George Zimmerman would have reacted the same way. And also, she or any of the rest of the jury didn't think race played a role in the question of Zimmerman profiling Trayvon Martin didn't come up when they were deliberating. Contradictory to that statement, she then said she thinks Zimmerman profiled Trayvon Martin because he was a member of the neighborhood watch and he profiled anyone who came in acting strange. Man. And I don't know, Disney, how do you feel about that?
Something is really, really wrong with this chick. Like, I think she feels like she's a part of the Zimmerman family or something.
You know, it's like, crazy. I'm going to let you speak. Let me get the rest of it, you know, because we're closing in on the end. She thinks Zimmerman is overeager to help people, and she'd be comfortable with him being part of the neighborhood watch in her community if he didn't go too far. She thinks he was frustrated with all the break-ins and robberies that had previously happened. She says she'd be comfortable with Zimmerman being a member of the neighborhood watch in her community now because she thinks he's learned a lesson. And she closed with saying Zimmerman getting his gun back doesn't worry her and thinks he'd be more responsible than anybody else on the planet right now. Now, these were all her statements. You know, word for word. These were her statements. And that's significant because the outcome of, like, the trial, you know, the verdict and all that stuff, you know, her going in, you know, her going in with this frame of mind, this reference of thinking, you know, is a big part of what the verdict was. Now, you know, she can only speak on behalf of herself, but I'm obviously for them deliberating, for them to come back with this verdict that, you know, you're thinking that a lot of these jurors or all of them felt similar, if not the same way, like, you know?
Yep, she said that.
You seem like you're lost of words, though. You seem like you for the lost of words over there, like you know what they say, that's crazy.
She said that she was, like, literally trust Zimmerman to watch her neighborhood, given the situation that just happened. She would trust him to protect her neighborhood?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she did say that. She really did.
So basically, she's saying that this was Trayvon Martin's fault. That's what she's saying. This was Trayvon Martin's fault.
Definitely. That's definitely what she's saying. She thinks it was Zimmerman screaming. She thinks Trayvon Martin threw the first punch and everything. I mean, just that frame. And I mean, keep in mind, this is a white woman. Not to say that she's racist or prejudiced. We don't know her. But I'm just saying, she's definitely showing a bias towards Zimmerman. I mean, going there with, I didn't sit here and say anything that would be on behalf of Trayvon Martin that would kind of add any type of balance. It was all Zimmerman. You know, so you talk about, I mean, I don't know. It is a bias. I can't say she's racist for sure. But you can definitely say she's biased towards George Zimmerman. What, a 30-year-old, what is he, 30-year-old man that killed a 17-year-old teenager, like, and totally biased towards him. I don't know what kind of makes you scratch your head, and, you know, just make you kind of say, like, wow, like, I don't know. But
she is definitely biased, though. She's definitely biased.
I can tell you're not happy by it, because I know that you being quiet is just like you're just trying to choose your next words wisely. Like, it's crazy. I mean, when I first watched this, like, I had time to breathe it in. And I don't know if this is your first time hearing this, but when I first watched it and I first heard this, I can't tell you, like, steam could have literally came from my head. Like, it's just a principle. If it was the other way around, and it was a white guy that happened to, and a black man that did it, I would still feel the same way. I would feel the same way. That still would have had me really ticked off. The same thing, you know. Like, it's just a principle. It's the principle that a young man had to die, you know. And that's the reason why all this, you know, racial tension and stuff is happening. But you know, you look at the way this juror thought. Basically. But she was saying, when she walked in to go deliberate, George Zimmerman was innocent. There was no way. So there was never a point in that deliberation that she was going to say George Zimmerman is guilty. So I don't even understand why it took 16 hours. I mean, I guess somebody was like, they had to really, really talk to somebody or something, because obviously her mind was made up. And if her mind was made up, there was not a chance of Zimmerman being convicted, because it would have had to have been unanimous. It would have had to have been in order for a conviction. It would have been a mistrial, you know, like how the Jody Arias turned out. So, I mean, just to know that was her frame of thinking going in. It's like, wow, the biasness is like, the bias is just, wow, man. Like, when I was first seeing the deliberation happening, I'm just like, I'm thinking like, wow, who knows how it's going to turn out? Little did we know that it was not a chance of Zimmerman being convicted. And people, you know, so the people that are in like, you know, in favor of, like, you know, Zimmerman and, you know, saying all the little, you know, racial comments, slurs behind a computer screen on the internet, you know, people need to, like, people that are biased just because George Zimmerman is a non-black and you think black people are hooligans and gangsters, you got to look at that, like, you got to look at everything. You know, if you look at it from an unbiased, which a lot of people aren't going to do, but if you look at it from an unbiased viewpoint, you know, and just look at everything, you got to see that there's a lot of biasness in Zimmerman's behalf. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah.
From the jewelry down to everything, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I just hate the idea of just, I think that it's, everything should be justified down the middle. It shouldn't be biased, but, you know, we're going to deal with that. But when it comes to a trial, man, it shouldn't be no bias. Like, it should be like, you know, for her to go in with that frame of mind, that way of thinking, is just, like, mind-boggling to me. It's crazy, man. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And you know what else is crazy? Speaking of crazy, what's the lady's name? Crystal Wright.
Yeah.
What's her name? Crystal Wright. Yeah. Let's speak on her for a second. Let's speak on Crystal Wright. I know you had a chance to like look up on her a little bit. What's your feelings on Miss Crystal Wright?
the Oreo that is against black people when she is half black, because you can obviously tell. I mean, she is very light-skinned, so you can tell that. I mean, you can just tell in her features that she is mixed. She has white and black in her. And, like, the way she speaks is like she's against black people. Like, I've watched a couple of interviews with her, and it's like anything, if like, she was in an interview with, like, two African-Americans, one was male and one was female, and this lady was just speaking to about black people and how great we are and, like, how, you know, we really don't have a lot of rights and all that. And you could just look at her facial expressions. Like, she was just, like, she was sickened by it. Like, she just did not like it. And I don't understand. Like, like, you have black in you, like, why would you be against your people? Like, what is wrong with you? I don't understand. But there are people like that, though, that even though they have half of something in there, they will represent for, like, if they're half white and half black, they'll represent just for their black side. They won't even, you know, represent for their other side at all. And it's just like Miss Ali was saying, like, she's just dying to be white. Like, she wants to be white so badly. I don't know. How do you feel about her?
I'm not going to lie. I was outraged watching it. I was outraged to see her, like, the way she views African-Americans, you know, her own kind. The way she views her own kind is self-inflicting. It is. It's self-inflicting. Like, it's crazy. It's like, I'm not going to lie. I was getting so irritated, I almost had to change the channel to see, like, someone that's black speak like that. And she swears up and down she's really justified and she really wants to see the best for black people, you know, but, you know, basically, like, black people are playing this whole victim role. And if you look at the statistics, 55% of black men are in jail. And when asked about that, she couldn't back it up. She was saying, basically, she was saying that that's her thought on it. That's not a proven fact that 55% of black men are in jail, but that's what she's saying. Basically, she thinks 55% of black men are in jail. And, you know, she's pretty much saying that, you know, Zimmerman had a right to profile Trayvon Martin because if you look at it, most of the people that do crime in areas are black. And Black is more black people doing crime than anybody else, and black people are the most dangerous people, and because of that, that's the reason why it had, like, that's pretty much her frame of mind. Like, pretty much, I mean, anybody's going to agree with the jackass Frank Taffy. Like, anybody's going to agree with that jackass. I mean, that just goes to show, I mean, what, George Zimmerman's best friend or something? His friend, his partner in crime? Anybody's going to agree with that jackass. I mean, that just goes to show you their view, like, on black people. Like, because George, I mean, Frank Taffy is obviously racist. I mean, obviously. I mean, just because he's not walking around with a KKK outfit on, he's not walking around with a white sheet on, you know, doesn't mean that he's not racist. I mean, you don't have to be stuck in the 1930s still lynching people to be racist, you know. It don't have to be that extreme. I mean, he's still racist. It don't change it. I mean, he's obviously racist. I mean, look at the sarcastic statements he says. I mean, anybody that objects to it, just go Google it or YouTube. Better yet, yeah, YouTube some of the, you know, videos with him speaking on the whole Zimmerman trial. I mean, it's one thing to have an opinion. It's another thing to be racist. Like, I have an opinion, but I'm far from racist. Like, I love all people.
Right.
Like, I don't have no bias towards white, Asian, Hispanic, anybody. You know, he's obviously racist. I mean, for this woman, Crystal Wright, to side with Frank Taffy just goes to show a lot. I didn't see any other black person. Listen, Nizzy Nate, even the white people on that panel was looking at Frank Taffy like, you jackass.
I know.
Nancy Grace is looking at him like, she was like, oh, I can't stand you. Like, she cannot stand Frank Taffy. Like, it's crazy. And they have a black woman sitting there like, I agree with Frank. He's right. Black people are this and that, and black people are the most, they'll do the most crime, and they it's always, it's most more black people killing other blacks and killing other people in jail, the black population. I'm like, man, just irritated. I'm not going to lie, Nizzy Nate. I think she irritated me more than Frank Taffy, because at least Frank Taffy is white, so you understand that, all right, he's biased towards his own race. But I mean, to see a black woman, you know, I guess she considers herself black. I mean, she says it, but I don't know if she really feels
black.
No,
she don't consider herself black, not the way she talks. She made me mad. She made me so mad just to hear that come out of her mouth. She made me so mad. I could not believe it.
And got enough to have a website called conservativeblackchick.com.
Yes! Oh,
like,
my
you,
goodness.
Black chick, you're going to call your website Black Chick when everything you stand for is against black people? Like, really?
Freaking
this is
pride.
The self-racism I was talking about. Like, this kind of stuff. You know? Black people that hate other black people, or white people that hate other white people. I mean, you look at her, I guess she's mixed. I mean, she looks like she's clearly mixed. She said on an interview, she said that her father and mother, she didn't say what any of her parents were mixed with or if they're mixed, but that her father and mother were both of black descent. She did say that. So, I mean, she got black on both sides, so she's more black. If she's got, like, white or something else in her, she's more black, it looks like. I mean, based on both of her parents having black descent, like, you know, so, I mean, like, for her to feel that way, like, you know, like, the things that she said is, like, really degrading, and I hate to see that. Like, you know, I hate to see that. Like, I just, you know, I could just picture me in a debate with her and probably getting so mad I would have to walk away. Like, I don't think I'll be able to take
it. I know.
You're irritating. You are a black chick, Nizzy Nate. You're a real black chick. You're not no sellout. You're a real black chick, so I can only imagine you probably had to hold you back. Probably sitting there trying to hold you back. Like, I tell you what, look, you taking off your shoes, but I tell you a real black chick. I'm going to show you a black chick, all right.
I'll tell you
what
a black person can really do.
Wow, it's crazy, man. But, you know, the point in bringing that up is just like, because racism is racism, it don't matter. Like, if it's racism, self-racism, you know, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, racism is racism, and it's hazardous. It really brings the community down, the city down, the state down, the country down. You know, so we got to act in a way that's like, you know, with togetherness. Like, you know, first of all that racism got to get left in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Like, they got to get left back there. As I stated earlier, we're all here. Nobody's going anywhere. They cut it out. Cut the, you know, you got to cut it out. We just got to, and I need an applause on that. We need an applause on that. We need applause on that. It's true, man. Like, we got to cut it out, man. Like, it's just really, like, that stuff got to get left back from the Stone Age where it was, you know? Like, it's ignorant. It's stupid. It's retarded. You know, people aren't retarded. To me, a person is retarded when they know, you know, when they do know better. And then they do it. That's retarded. You know? It's like, you got to cut it out, man. It is what it is. Deal with it. We all here. You know, it's not, you know, for Crystal Wright to be saying all of this stuff to bring down black people isn't helping. I think in her mind, she really thinks she's helping. But after I listen to a Crystal Wright speech, I feel, it makes me feel ashamed of being black. I don't want to feel that way. She's, to me, sellout. Sellout disgrace. Like, I would love to debate with her, and I would try my hardest not to cuss her out. Like, I would really try so hard, but I would love to have a debate with her and just really try my hardest to, like, keep my composure. Because I just would have to, like, somebody has to really challenge her. Like, she's on stage with, like, people like Al Sharpton and people that are going to, like, be really professional and civilized. You need somebody that's going to get a little more into it, like, you know, really challenge. Like, no, listen. Listen here, Miss Black Chick. Like, Miss Ali is tall enough. I like hearing, you know, Miss Ali is like,
yes.
You know, it's more like, you know, she kind of, but, you know, kind of like really is more like suited to like challenge that type of, you know, that type of debate with someone with the frame of mind of Crystal Wright. We running out of time, man. I wish, you know, we had more time, but, you know, we'll be back next week with a fresh show. And there's something else that I didn't get to touch on that I definitely want to touch on. And I'll probably open up the next show with it. And then, you know, we'll finally move on from this whole racism thing. Because, I mean, regardless of, you know, we know racism exists and stuff. But let's not exaggerate. Let's not act like, you know, we still don't have rights and there still ain't a lot of good things going on right now. Let's not let the media distraction and the frenzy really just corrupt our frame of mind and make us think we're like actually slaves and things are really that bad. It's not that bad as it seemed to be. It's just the way things are portrayed through like the media and stuff and, you know, hearing damaging, self-inflicting negative comments like Miss Crystal Wright, you know, that type of stuff. You know, hearing a jackass Frank Taffy, that type of stuff. You know, you got to disregard that. And keep in mind that we're free, we have rights, we have a black president. There's a lot of good things going on. Black and white people stand together, united, more than ever. So keep that in mind and understand that, you know, things aren't as bad as they seem. And with that being said, that is our show for the night. So as always, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Once again, you're listening to It's Real Talk Radio. I'm your host, Tay Real.
I'm your co-host, Nizzy Nane.
You can catch us on Mondays and Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by dialing 347-838-9540.
Facebook us at It's Real Talk Radio. Follow us on Twitter at It's Real Radio MD, or you can just shoot us an email at It's Real Talk Radio at yahoo.com.
Stay tuned for the next episode. Peace and love, y'all. Good night.
Everybody, good night.